to the Radio Life Sciences Podcast for a behind-the-scenes look into GSLS, made by students and educators for the scientists of tomorrow.
Welcome to another episode in the Your Career series of the Radio Life Sciences Podcast. The Your Career series covers different topics related to your career after you have graduated. My name is Tessa and today I am joined again by Michelle Ritman and Remco van den Kamp, both career officers at Utrecht University, and Panos Telefidis, who is a student in the master's program of infection and immunity, who has the question, how do I discover what job is for me? Remco, can you remind the listeners about what we talked about in a previous episode?
Yes, of course. In the previous episode, we discussed self-exploration, and we didn't only discuss it, Panos did it. So he got some insight in his qualities, his skills, his motivations, and his interests. We worked with a mind map to see if there's any connections between these elements to even find out which ones are even maybe more important than others and how they are connected. The first step in finding your place in the labor market, I would say, looking at your personal traits.
Yeah, lovely. And today we're going to continue on this labor market through labor market orientation.
Yes.
And Panos, for this, you did another part of preparation. Can you talk us through what you did?
Yeah, so I did the assignments of labor market exploration and also of networking.
In the e-learning.
On e-learning. Yeah, they were really helpful. And I also saw some connections with the previous chapters of self-exploration, like with the previous assignments. And this is really encouraging for me.
Nice.
I think that I'm like focusing more and more on more specific things.
So what did you do? What exercises did you take?
Yeah, so there were some exercises about... So first, in the previous podcast, we discussed about the P traits, the personal traits, and now it was about the E traits. The labor market exploration chapter was about the E traits.
What are E traits?
The environmental traits.
Oh, can you tell us more?
Yeah, so it's about traits or things that you really value and you want from the organization that you want to work in, and also things that you really value and you want from your position to offer, to have. So if you combine this with personal traits, my understanding is that you can have a clearer view of what you really want and where to look at.
I wanted to joke around and say, and then all of a sudden you know what you want. But you, yes, this is a good step in the direction of getting to know what might suit you.
Yeah,
looking for the personal environment fit or for a personal environment fit.
Yeah.
So yeah, this was the labor market exploration. I did some assignments. I looked on LinkedIn for some alumni of my program to see where they ended up after their graduation. Also, I looked at which organizations are they working right now, and I picked three organizations, also three positions. And based on these three positions and organizations, I wrote down my work traits and organizational traits.
Okay, quite a lot of steps.
Yeah.
What was it like exploring this field of what alumni are doing?
Yeah, actually, it was not that surprising. I was expecting what I saw because from my field, because I'm studying infection and immunity, so most people go for a PhD or they are going for a research position. So like the vast majority, maybe above 70% of the positions were PhD and research related. But there were a couple of positions in consultancy and scientific writing, and especially the latter I found really interesting. And I'll be really happy to discuss it today with you also. Yeah, and then it was networking. I did some exercises for networking.
Yeah, before we dive into what you have found, or we already heard some, I'm curious, were there any mental obstacles, internal convictions that were preventing you before you started with labor market exploration? We discussed this in the chapter, as you know.
Of course, I think the most obvious obstacle is I don't know where to start because it seems really overwhelming. And especially in my field, we only hear about from the day we start our courses till our graduation about research. Okay, you'll have to be a researcher. This is like the norm.
Yeah.
But we don't know like any other opportunities.
You said you were you managed to pick out some positions in organization. So how did you do that? You weren't able to start, and all of a sudden you have these three.
Yeah.
What did you do?
As you may have already guessed, two of the three positions were research related.
Right.
Like researcher. I mostly focus on the titles, to be honest, first.
Mm-hmm. So you went to the LinkedIn alumni tool. So in LinkedIn, you looked for your alumni from your program.
Exactly.
And you focused on the job titles, yes?
Exactly. And I was scrolling down because like the first people that you see on LinkedIn are just master students.
Yeah, they're the one that's closest by in your network. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as you scroll down, I saw people working in companies. I think it was like three or four different organizations that I saw. And then I picked two research-related, and one was about scientific writing, which I find really interesting. One of my skills was writing.
Yeah, as we can see, like it was just pointed out how many notes you make and you'd like to write down literally, not just using your computer.
Yeah.
So your skill and interest is kind of mm-hmm. obvious there.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't expect it to be so appealing to me, because it was like the first time I saw a position like that, scientific writer. And I was really curious, and I was really surprised to see that it really fitted my interests.
So what elements did you derive from that position that you feel are attractive?
Mm-hmm. I think what I really liked was the fact that you make figures and abstracts for conferences and post presses about your research. You also communicate and interact like with a research group, because you have to have a deep knowledge of what they are doing and be able to understand what they're doing to write these things down.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I really like the fact that there was flexibility, because you're a scientific writer, so you don't need to be every day in the lab all the time. You have to be really detail-oriented, because you have to explain like very carefully and with accuracy what you want, and I really like that.
Yeah.
And you can also work independently. You have the time and space like to do your job independently, but also you have to cooperate with other people, because in the end, like the paper or this summary or abstract or everything is a collaborative work.
Yeah. So what do you could be plus or the yeah what you really like about being a scientific writer instead of being the researcher?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it has to do, like, to be realistic, I'm a little bit terrible with time management. So, like, most experiments take me way longer to finish. So I don't know if I would be the appropriate person for a research position in the lab.
Yeah.
Scientific writing, I find it easier to focus, actually, because when I'm doing experiments, I'm getting distracted pretty easily. But when I'm writing and I'm sitting in front of the computer, and I really like what I'm writing, and I make figures and stuff, I feel like more efficient and productive. So yeah, that was something I really liked.
It's really interesting. I think you can hear it as well, but I'm looking at you in a nonverbal. You're talking about, you know, doing the lab and the chaos, and you look like chaos. And then you talk about writing, and there's focus, and there's your whole body turns into focus, and it expresses like, okay, this part is for me.
Exactly. And I don't mind like taking a lot of time to write stuff. It took me 3 months to write my thesis back in my bachelor's.
Yeah.
But I went into too much detail. But I like that. Yeah. It's not that I did it because someone forced me to do it.
So, right.
Yeah.
We're also curious about, you know, any organizations that you found mm-hmm. interesting.
Yes.
And so what did you take out from that?
Mm-hmm. So from the alumni tool, I saw that some of the alumni of my program and also of biomedical sciences in general were working at Genmab, which is an antibody therapeutic company. They make antibody therapeutics against cancer. Also, another company was a spin-off company, a biotech company named Amphera. And what I really liked about this company is the project. They're working on a type of immune cells called the dendritic cells, that they can present some molecules and some proteins of cancer cells to other immune cells, which then kill them. And I found that really interesting that they are making like different cocktails of cancer antigens, as they name them. So I found that really interesting and really meaningful. And also the last one was Galápagos, if I am pronouncing it correctly. Yeah, which is a similar company with GeneMap mostly. They are interested in cell therapies, immune cell therapies, and they are strongly involved in immunology and cancer.
Right. Yeah. So what did you derive as the traits that, you know, are common to these three organizations?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first of all, really liked about this organization was that, especially with GeneMap, because when I looked at their website and I saw their value statement, I saw that the first one, I think, or the second one of GeneMap was integrity.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also one of my motivations, integrity, justice,
right.
Respect.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, from the first episode. And this actually surprised me because most companies, I think, at least from what I've researched online, focus mostly on their work. Like, we are really motivated to provide the best quality of services for patients, blah, blah, blah. But they are not really giving too much attention on like values such as integrity or independency or respect.
Yeah.
And I really like that they mentioned that there. Of course, I really like that they are these companies are treatment oriented. They improve the lives of patients, and that's something really motivating for me. Also, there is space to grow. All these companies, especially the two bigger ones, GeneMap and Galápagos, specifically mentioned that you have a lot of space to grow and we want you to take initiatives. So I really like that also.
Which kind of matches your interest as well, of trying to explore new fields and getting in-depth
exactly.
knowledge.
Exactly, exactly. So I really like that. And the environment is friendly. And I also know that firsthand because I went to the BCF career event.
Mm-hmm.
It was some days ago.
Yeah.
And I also talked with some employees of GeneMap. There was no other employees from Galápagos or Amphera there. And all of them told me that they are really happy with the working environment. There is respect there. Everyone likes each other's company. And also some other employees that came to give a talk in one of my master's seminars also said the same thing. So this seems to be a really healthy working environment.
Yeah. Do you feel that having identified your quality, skills, interests and motivation helped you have that conversation with the people of GeneMap?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, absolutely. Because I saw I asked them more specific questions, like for their working environment or what do they do, but things that are connected with my qualities and motivations, not like random things. Like, for example, yeah, how do you get promoted, let's say. I asked more specific things now than what I would have asked if I had not taken the test.
That's really interesting because that is one of the questions that we get. What do I ask in an interview or in an in a network situation?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's not a question; it's coming from your what you want, which means that you started investigating if this is the right fit for you instead of doing maybe something else, which people tend to do when they feel like there might be a job at stake, which is pleasing or, you know, promoting themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So you're really exploring by interviewing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. My take-home message, what I realized through all these assignments, was that the problem is that we're mostly focusing on whether we are eligible for one job or not, and not if this job actually fits us, suits
right.
us.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a mutual fit. It's not that, yeah, I'm eligible, so I'm applying. Maybe you see that, like, in this organization, they are working on things or they have an ideology that's different from what you want and what you value. But you can't see that from a title. You just see if you're eligible or not.
And is this something that you knew already, or was this... an insight that derived from this work?
I think it's mostly arrived through this work.
Yeah.
I would say that. Yeah. Yeah, because I was looking at occupations the same way. Like, I was looking at occupations and said, okay, this title and this description looks relevant to my studies. I'm eligible, so I will apply. But it didn't go into further detail to see if all the other values like fit me.
Yeah, it should be empowering, and I kind of hear that in what you say, because it's not only about them and how do I apply to their needs. No, it's how, is this a fit? Is it a mutual fit?
Yeah.
And this really, and it makes it less stressful because you're less dependent on them, because they have an offer and you should buy it. No, it's one of the offers maybe.
And you have a more clear mind to really see what you like and what you want.
Yeah. And I love to hear this from you.
Yeah, me too, because it was really relieving.
Yeah, I can see that.
To change my perspective on how I viewed these things.
Yeah. And it's great that you felt empowered. I can imagine that there's listeners thinking, well, it's not for me because I have personal obstacles that hinder me exploring this freely and getting to know myself as freely as you already did. What can we tell those listeners who are facing these personal obstacles?
Well, I don't know what the difference. I would be curious to hear from Panos what the difference is when we met him. It's not like you were stressed about the situation, but there were some changes. There have been some changes. Like, what has caused these changes?
Yeah, because
of perspective.
Like, yeah, because my perspective and the perceptions I had of things were wrong, maybe completely wrong. For example, yeah, let's say for the self-exploration, I think most of the people see it as, okay, I have to commit to this because it's something that will change my life and it will be something that will follow me for the rest of my life. At least this was the way I saw it, like that I really need to focus and pay too much attention and it's an assignment at first. But as you go through and you think about all these things, everything makes sense in the end because it's a dynamic you have. Yeah, it's not that these values and qualities and everything will follow you for the rest of your life. You just have a snapshot. I really like this word, snapshot of yourself. And now, after that, you can really connect these values and qualities with labor market exploration. Like, the starting point is significantly better, I think, when you have already done these things.
Yeah. If I can add to this answer, what I feel works is that you, Panos, started to do the work. He started to do the exercises, and he was open to discuss them with us. And there's, like, we've put a lot of stuff in the e-learning at the same time, trying to make it, you know, not more extend too many pages. But it could be something that an alumni says that sticks with you. It could be something, you know, the snapshot has stuck with you. Maybe it doesn't work for somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a mental change because of what you read, the alumni that we've included, the student that goes through the exercises for you, but also doing the work yourself and then discussing the work. And anywhere in this process, there can be a small change or a big change.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really like, I like making the comparison to scientific research. It's doing the steps. You have to build your hypotheses. You have to you have to design your research. You have to do your experiments. You have to start writing, and sometimes you have to redesign. So you have your hypotheses, but it's a snapshot as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you think like, oh my, no, this is not the right hypothesis, or this is not the right research question. So I need to go back a step and then modify.
Mm-hmm.
We've called it career crafting because we feel it's a you craft until you find a fit, one fit, a few fits, and then you start over again. And I don't know if the listeners know design thinking, but it's design thinking. There's no, you have to prototype. You have to build hypotheses basically, and research, investigate, find companies that match your ideas, and then find out that the truth is different. Go back to the drawing table. So it's doing the work.
Yeah, and to really add to this metaphor, when is the last time that you did scientific research by yourself? So asking questions to the people around you is maybe even necessary to make sure that this whole process is going well in general. Mm. So please don't do it alone. And I think that's also what you did. Maybe it's just because of the podcast that you're talking to us in this way, but I'm not sure. Did you talk to others about what you did in the exercises? I'm quite curious.
Yeah. So I talked about it with my parents and some friends. Yeah, and they also picked my top five qualities. Yeah, and actually I was really surprised because they saw like one of my top five qualities for them was teamwork. And I think I'm a team player, but I mostly want to work independently. But they see it differently, and that I found really surprising. But when I thought about it, and I reflected on what I've done up to this point, I think it makes sense. It makes sense. I like to work independently, but in the end, it all comes down to teamwork.
Mm.
Even for my projects at university, in my bachelor's, or here, in the research group where I'm currently in. So yeah, the three of the five qualities matched. So I'm pretty happy about that.
Mm. Right. Yeah.
But it's a great relief that you see. I think the greatest relief is that you see that professionals, as you are, understand the root causes of our concerns. Because I was a little bit, I didn't believe actually at first that this would really help me, because I thought that, okay, we will discuss about things that seem obvious, but they're not really obvious. And I really want to highlight that, because we see some things as being obvious, but in the end they are not obvious at all. And our perception of these things in life, in job, in what we want, is completely wrong.
Yeah.
Mm.
And you say as a professional, but I also experienced the same anxiety when I was young. This is actually one of the main drivers I have for this work, because I had no clue on how to start and where to start, how to work through it.
And how did you navigate then?
Well, I did many attempts. And I got stuck because I'm good at reflecting. So I reflected and reflected and reflected and reflected. But I didn't start, actioning stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And also looking at the labor market more carefully. And then I got stuck in if I look at this, I'm not qualified and I can go back to the drawing table. Mm-hmm. So I was immediately in labor market exploration. I was thinking about, am I qualified or not?
Mm-hmm.
Which is a real, it really puts you down.
Mm-hmm.
I feel this is really can be really sensitive for some people in the first part of the exploration. So self-exploration, I really don't want to talk about the interview, because I feel like if we start talking about the interview, you start talking about how do I comply? How do I show that I have that? No, it's not about how do you show it.
Mm-hmm.
It's about, do you have it or not?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And does it energize you? And not because you can make money with it, does it energize you? And we can go to the money part later on.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when someone has identified their E-traits and then explores and sees what jobs are out there, is it necessary to have this full match, or are you able to thrive in a job that does not fit all E-traits that you have identified?
I'm not sure if the perfect match, if it even exists,
right,
to be honest. No one's job is 100% perfect. So looking for that can only disappoint you, I'm afraid. Is it necessary? No, I don't really think so. I think you can still thrive in jobs that are not 100% fit. Maybe you can even thrive in a job that fits for like 50%. But it also depends on where you're at in your life at that point in time. Because maybe your job isn't the perfect fit for you regarding your P traits, your E traits that we discussed. But might also be the case that your personal life just doesn't allow it,
mm-hmm,
for that time. So if you are comfortable in your job, you know what you're doing, you get there in time, you go home at the same time every day, and you're happy with that because that's what your personal life needs at that moment in time, that's okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be perfect. No.
Yeah, and the other thing is that it depends on where do you want to live this P trait. Is it so important that it needs to be part of your work, or can you do it outside of your work? So my wife needs to move. She wants to move. So she likes being a teacher because she's moving around, and she worked for a while behind a desk, and she was not happy.
Right.
So it was so important that it needed to come back into her work.
Mm-hmm.
But it can be that you do sports and you're perfectly fine with that, and you can do desk work in your work.
Might also be the case that you find out during a second job, a third job, even further along, that one of the traits is essential to you. But that's something you're going to find out.
Right.
I'm not sure about mine, to be honest. This is only my second job.
Mm.
I know that what I really like, if I'm talking both personal and environmental traits, that I really need a good connection with my colleagues, for example. Right. So that's an essential one that's probably not going to change up until retirement, basically. Yep. But other ones are likely to change because of my personal life, because of maybe self-confidence even, that changes over time. Something else might also be the case.
What would we advise listeners who are struggling to identify their E-traits? Are there activities they can do?
Well, of course, we have AI nowadays, which is wonderful. I used to say just use LinkedIn and then take the step to the real world, contacting people. But you can, even if you're not creative, you can use AI to help you brainstorm. So you can use questions like, give me 10 positions with these key elements. So you enter characteristics that are both person and environment related. And it'll give you some ideas and short descriptions. And then they can look at some of them and like, oh, this is an interesting one. I never thought about this one. And this is one that matches my ideas, which is fine too, because it might still be a match. And you can ask for companies in which you would be able to do these positions. So I really, for ideation, I think we have a new valuable tool, which is AI. It's not even included in our current e-learning. But it is in the trainings that we work with after the e-learning. So this is something that we could do because of time. I don't know, but we could do a quick search and just give the results to the audience.
Yeah, let's
and see if you have one or two new ideas that you haven't thought about.
Maybe we can even find out if AI thinks you should be a scientific writer, for example. I'm very curious if that's the case.
So, Panos, you just added the asked ChatGPT to give you a top 10 of higher education jobs with the following characteristics. So, which characteristics have you entered?
Yeah, actually, I've entered many of them, but some of the most important of those are autonomy, attention to detail, flexibility, meaningfulness, respect, space to grow, self-reliance, and integrity.
Yeah, and I take it that you've also included immunology or...
Yeah, one of them was about immunology.
Yeah, right, otherwise it could be many, many, many jobs. Yeah,
yeah. true.
So is there a surprise there? Or are there confirmations, stuff that you found?
Yeah. Actually, one was different. One was biostatistician. Which, yeah, I think it makes sense because they work independently and they, but also as a member of a group because they have to discuss their science with research teams. So, yeah, on the one hand, it makes sense, but on the other hand, I didn't expect to see that here. Also, yeah, counseling psychologist. And it has all these traits in it because it, they manage individual and group therapy sessions independently.
Yeah, right. So it's
not, a little bit of a switch.
Yeah, that's a big switch.
Yeah, that's a really big switch. Yeah, I've never thought about being a psychologist, a counseling psychologist.
But maybe this counseling part is something that could be integrated in your job somewhat. Having this position of helping another person.
Yeah, because they also put thoughtful as one of the...
Right. But it does help to add, so only select on the also the hard knowledge that you have of immunology, which you currently don't have on psychology.
Yeah, and it says it's about counseling psychologists of university health services.
Oh, right. Yeah, so I'm an urban planner, guys. So, yes, of course, you can become a career officer.
I'm an ethicist. So, yeah, I can definitely agree with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and speaking of ethicists, one is medical ethicist.
Oh, really?
Right.
I like that one.
Cool.
Is that new or a new idea?
Yeah, new idea. I've never thought about it, but it... fits really well, I think, with what I have in my traits. So, yeah, maybe I'll think about it as well.
Nice. Just to give you some ideas on how you could continue. Michelle, you have some other prompts that we that students could use?
Yes, definitely. So what you can do if you don't know exactly what one of them entails, you can use a prompt such as, could you give me a more elaborate description of job
medical
XYZ?
Assist.
Another one would be, could you give me a top 10 of organizations that would be eligible for this position? And another one is to say, can you give me some ideas? So a prompt would be, could you provide me with a list of 10 possible ways to research or experience if I want to be a ethicist, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. Yeah,
I've even asked ChatGPT for videos. I mean, of course, it's. I think it's still up until 22 that it's getting its database from. But yeah, so I was... I did a journalistic investigator or something. I asked for two videos. There were two videos on YouTube explaining what this job entailed. And so you can also have a look at that and see if there are other ways in which you get some information from the World Wide Web.
Mm. Yeah, and of course you have to take everything that AI says in general with a little bit of salt, grain of salt.
Yeah.
But still, it can provide with you with some ideas if you don't have any or you have no idea where to start. You can also ask ChatGPT or any other AI program, I don't know what to do, now what? Help me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What would be my first step if I want to do this?
So AI can be a good brainstorming tool to kind
definitely,
of explore
that's it.
See what's going on.
Yeah, that's it.
Great. Panos, let's go back to the e-learning again. You also did some preparation on networking.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about what you learned there?
Yeah, I learned about, I did some assignments to see how my network looks like on LinkedIn, but also without LinkedIn, like the people I interact with every day or I used to interact in the past. Also obstacles that get in the way and the one personal one is that in a professional setting networking feels like an obligation, like because I am in a professional, let's say, event, I need to network with people, which now that I think about it, doesn't make sense, but when you're on the spot you feel like this way. I feel this way, at least
many students do.
Yeah, and I guess, yeah, it's not only me. It's also sometimes scary because you see, for example, an esteemed professor and you're like, I have nothing. You feel like at some points I feel like I have nothing to offer them and they can offer them like their knowledge, their insights. So why would they like, I don't know, spend their time talking to me, like, or not waste their time, but yeah, spend their time talking to me. And other fears like these.
Mm.
Yeah, we hear these a lot. Also that it might be superficial, or, you know, it's only about getting a job. But it's interesting that you that the word offer comes up again, because we just talked about it, that you, in the process, you were losing, getting rid of that word because you were investigating. So again, this would be the word to replace it with. So what can you investigate through this talk or this meeting? If you're thinking about offering somebody something again, then you're losing the perspective of this is a research for your person environment fit. So in this situation, what could I do to investigate further? What question do I want to ask this professor to get to know his job better or the field better or the opportunities better?
Yeah, and maybe also if you change the perspective and think that, okay, maybe I can also give, maybe he can also benefit from me, and I benefit from here for sure, but he can also benefit from me, even from the interaction with a younger person. I don't know.
Definitely. We hear this a lot. So people are interested in talking to younger people, especially if they're outside of university. Like, okay, so what are you learning nowadays in your master's? Or what is your perspective now on this topic that I've been working on for 30 years? So fresh perspectives or new theories from university are definitely stuff that people could take out of this conversation.
Yeah, and now that I think about it, maybe they also like see you as their selves 30 years ago or 20 years ago. So
definitely,
yeah,
they might see your potential.
Yeah,
yeah. Also,
a lot of the time we hear from alumni, like, why would you don't want to talk to a student? Because we ask this question on purpose, because students say, why would they want to talk to me? And they say, well, I'd like to help somebody out. And I know how stressful it was when I was in that same position. So yes, please, I can just do something easy and talk about my job, which I like.
Mm-hmm. I think the most difficult thing is to break the ice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is by far the most difficult thing, because you're approaching, but you feel like you're being weird. And then take a step back and act as if you don't look at them. Yeah, like weird situations.
It can also be like, is this the environment for me? Because I feel uncomfortable in these types of situations, and I think I still will be in the future as well. So I like to just send an email or a message and reserve, book some time for an in-depth talk, because that's what I enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can put on top of that, like, and a lot of people think that we as career officers really like networking. Well, I'm going to be honest with you. I really don't like it. You should not put me in any network event with drinks and stuff where you have to approach people. That's really not my thing. So like Remco said, maybe I should be reaching out on LinkedIn, for example, sending an email. That's also a way to do it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to be that person in big networking events and you have to approach that person. As long as you know a name, you will find a way to reach out to them if you want to. Mm-hmm.
And again, here the person traits can come in handy. So they're pointing you towards the work that you like, but also the type of networking that you might enjoy more than others. Mm-hmm. What are the requirements in which I can, you know, easily ask my questions?
Yeah. I guess it depends on the person, but do you think that it's better to force yourself into talking to people in these kind of events? Because in the end, it will lead you to being like better and learn more things about the job that you like. Or because if you have this personal interaction, I think it's different and you get information more efficiently and easily. So do you think...
Yeah. I would enjoy the personal information and personal attention, but this could be an obstacle as well. I was going to say, I don't see the opportunity of doing this in a few minutes. So this can be either a mental obstacle or it could be the truth, but I would like some more time. So I would maybe go up to the person and say, hey, I'd love to talk to you more in depth. Could I send you an email through or a text through LinkedIn,
mm-hmm,
and see if we can have a coffee? Or do this anyways, not approach the person and say, well, I saw you at this event and I'd love to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't think he's going to say yes or no because it's an email.
Yeah, yeah, I guess.
Instead of it's in person or not.
Yeah, and it can really benefit you to do this kind of networking. If I'm thinking like the group that we are in this table right now, I know Michelle through networking. I know Remco because we talked at some event.
Yeah.
You know them because of networking. Like, a lot can grow from just having a small chat and then having coffee sometime.
Yeah,
yeah, I think it also shows that your network is probably a lot bigger than you think.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you have friends, family, but you also have people you study with. You have your professors, you have your teachers in general, but you also have people like us that you maybe met through some random medium.
Yeah.
And
we're a network now.
Mm-hmm.
We're now networking.
But I have to say that I don't have your LinkedIn.
Oh, no, you can yet.
Well, it's impossible to find, so good luck.
I will send you an invite.
But maybe in my second network, I think I will have you. I should have you.
Yeah.
I think so too.
Yeah, definitely.
And we'll you can be bold and add me to your network. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I actually add a lot of students that I talk to, also because I really like to know where people end up.
Yeah.
And also to find you back if I need someone to talk to my two students.
I would not randomly, I wouldn't send in, people do that, but I want to say, please don't invite somebody without a message.
Mm.
If you don't know each other, especially. So if you know each other really well, there's no need for a message. But if not, then add a message. What is your purpose of sending this message? Why would you like to connect?
Mm-hmm.
And for networking, it's not about asking for a job. That's not an interesting question. Nobody's going to like that question. It's like ringing at somebody's door and asking, would you like to buy this? Yeah.
Nobody likes that.
No. So you need to know the person first. So, but if exploration is your goal, this is something that I can do. You want to talk about what it's like to be a career officer? Definitely. I love doing it, so I can talk about it.
You mean with every connection you make to send a message?
Yeah.
Or, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you have the goal of, you know, having a coffee or getting to know that person further. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I also really like it when people reach out to me with a message, because that way I can remember how I know them.
That's yeah. Right.
So when you're your network is growing bigger and bigger, you tend to forget some names, because I have hundreds of connections on LinkedIn. I don't remember every single person, unfortunately. So when I look back at messages, for example, and they have reached out to me when they sent me an invite, then I know what I know them from.
That's so true, and I've never thought about it. I will do it myself, because I always send connections without messages. So, yeah, but now that you mention this, I think this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So now we're kind of approaching the end of the episode. We have talked to you for two episodes now, and I want to ask you the most difficult question you came with. How have you discovered what job is for you? Do you have a clear idea? Clearer idea?
Of what kind of jobs are suitable for me?
Yeah.
Yes, because I also look at it like a mutual fit. After all these assignments and the courses of the e-learning, because at first I was only looking at it as this is the job, I'm eligible, the skills and tasks seem to be relevant with my educational background, so I'm applying. Okay, but I didn't pay too much attention into what I really like, what really matters to me. And why am I applying to this job? What I try to find in this job?
Yeah.
So I think the whole perspective changed.
Yeah.
After these exercises, and with this mind map of the the personal and the E traits, the environmental traits, I think you can more, let's say, safely predict what you will see in a job. Because when you only see skills and tasks, yeah, you have only one part of the story. But the other part of the story is about yourself, what you really want from this. Because the skills and tasks, you can find these things in many different organizations and positions. But maybe there are some specific organizations where you also find some other things that are not tasks and skills, but are things that you really value and you want.
So I want to thank you, all three of you, very much for being here. Panos, we'll be saying goodbye, and we'll wish you the very best in the rest of your studies and future career.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you so much for your openness in this whole sessions.
It was a very insightful experience for me also, and I think the pivotal point was self-exploration. After self-exploration, if you do it the right way, then I think most of the things make sense. Most things make sense.
And in one sentence, what is the right way to do it?
Just look at what you really value and what you want, because there could be many occupations where you see things that you value. It doesn't have to be relevant to your academic background. Because I think that this is what keeps most students behind. That they only see like, okay, what is relevant with my academic study. But if you really focus on what matters to you and what you really want, I think what are your motivations and skills and qualities,
which can lie outside of your program, you mean?
Exactly.
Nice. So now that we know more about labor market and networking, it's time for us to take the next step and start applying for jobs. So next episode of Your Career Series will focus on CV, cover letters and interviews. And of course, I'll be joined by Remco and Michelle again. So thanks everyone, and until the next one.